At their monthly meeting on Thursday, June 19th, the Kingston Police Service Board received a presentation on a new community drug checking program that has already shown promise in improving public health and safety in the region. The initiative is part of Ontario's drug checking community, a leader in the delivery of these services and community-led monitoring of the unregulated drug supply. The program was launched by Toronto's drug checking service in 2019. The program offers drug users the ability to have their unregulated drugs tested before consumption to ensure they're not contaminated or in unexpected concentration. It also provides a snapshot of the unregulated drug supply market in Kingston, data that is made available to all those impacted and the general public through emergency alerts and monthly reports. Kingston became the first jurisdiction outside of Toronto to join the initiative in November 2024. With the long-term goal of establishing at least one drug checking site in each of Ontario's 29 public health unit regions. Locally, the program operates through the Integrated Care Hub on Montreal Street. Karen McDonald, Executive Director of Toronto's Drug Checking Service and Ontario's Drug Checking Community, presented an in-depth overview of the program's structure, impact, and findings.
So our program is made up of three groups. There are collection sites, analysis sites, and then the central operating team. So collection sites are community agencies that are exempted to collect samples from and share results with service users. Their main role, like the Integrated Care Hub, is just to, you know, have existing and trusted relationships with people who use drugs, collect samples, share results, and really educate their communities about what it is that's circulating. Next, we have analysis sites. So these are the purple. We currently have three. These are clinical research or government labs that are exempted to analyze samples and report drug checking results. And we're super fortunate. These are, you know, scientific experts who are incredibly skilled at determining the composition of really any specimen, and we're using drugs. And then we have the central operating team. So that's the team that I run at St. Michael's Hospital, super small team. Our job is really just to make the lives of the collection sites and the analysis sites easier.
Justine McIsaac, Coordinator of Consumption and Treatment Services at Kingston's ICH, offered context on the implementation of the program in Kingston.
Just to give you some context as to why we decided to start drug checking in our community is because we have a bunch of people that are very unwell and are using substances that are very dangerous to not only the people that use them, but the greater community. And our goal with this program was to give people a better knowledge of what it was they were using, as well as the community. Initially, I piloted a project with a local group through Queens, which is called Spectra Plasmatics. I helped them write a grant to Health Canada to pilot their equipment with the support of the municipality as well. In turn, that allowed me to get the equipment for free, which is a $30,000 piece of equipment. And I have worked on that relationship with them since. The machine itself takes a very small amount of the substance or a piece of equipment that that person has used to inject the substance, and we will test that, and it'll tell us exactly what is in the substance that the person used.
McIsaac, drawing from firsthand experience at the ICH, emphasized that the program had an immediate life-saving impact.
Somebody presented a substance to me that looked like MDMA, which is considered a party drug. It's very casually used amongst young people in college, universities, things like that. This drug presented as if it was what it was, and it was not. It looked like MDMA. It was stamped as if it was MDMA, and it turned out to be pill-pressed fentanyl. Now, the risks for that individual who has no opioid dependency whatsoever, that would have been consequential and most likely would have resulted in death for that individual if they had not come in and tested that drugs. Because he brought that sample in and I was able to test it, I was able then to work with public health and formulate a community alert to warn people that there were substances in our community that looked like something else but actually weren't what they were presenting to be.
In her presentation, McDonald shared what they've uncovered about the unregulated drug supply. The primary focus was on fentanyl and other opioids. While a common fear is party drugs being laced with fentanyl, the more common case is fentanyl being contaminated with other substances or having unpredictable concentration.
We have checked over 8,000 samples that were not expected to be opioids, and we've actually only confirmed fentanyl or another high-potency opioid in 11 of those. So certainly not to say that it doesn't happen. The risks are incredibly high, but I do think there's just this general conception that this happens all the time. And what kind of worries me about that messaging is just that we're detracting from the population of people who are actually at risk. If we're putting all of our focus on, you know, people who use cocaine and MDMA and their risk of being contaminated by fentanyl, we're kind of ignoring the population of people who actually are at risk and dying.
In Toronto, only 3% of fentanyl samples tested were found to contain what users believed they were consuming. Although fewer samples have been collected in Kingston to date, the trend is similar.
And on the Kingston front, not a single fentanyl sample that has been collected by the Integrated Care Hub since we launched this service has met service users' expectations. So every single sample has been contaminated with unexpected drugs.
Fentanyl samples are often contaminated with other high-potency opioids, as well as central nervous system and respiratory depressants like benzodiazepines and animal tranquilizers. McIsaac noted that this contamination significantly impacts operations at the ICH, especially complicating overdose responses.
When we first opened, an opioid overdose response was pretty cut and dry. Now it has become so complicated that we've had to change our whole process of how we respond to overdoses to ensure that we're keeping people as safe as possible. So we're constantly on a learning curve as to how we can treat people appropriately and keep them as safe as possible.
In addition to contamination, the strength of fentanyl in the unregulated supply is highly unpredictable, with concentrations fluctuating drastically.
For one thing, what does that mean for the person who's using the drug? Are they experiencing withdrawal? But also think about if you were to flip it the other way. Someone's tolerance is kind of down because the fentanyl supply is quote-unquote weaker, and then suddenly the next month it increases by 5 times the amount, of course the risk of overdose is going to be higher.
Members of the Kingston Police Service Board recently visited the collection site at the ICH. Board member Adam Coven remarked on the strong trust that has developed between service providers and people seeking services, a key factor in the program's effectiveness.
Going to the site yesterday was amazing for so many reasons, but one of the things that I applaud is that here in Kingston, which is the only center that we know of, the amount of trust that obviously has gone on because of your services, your staff, your support. Without breaching that trust to the people that are coming to you, which amazes me. I'm standing there with the chief and deputy police, and we have people that you're saying are coming in with their drugs and their testing. It's an amazing amount of trust.
Board Chair Jared Stearns asked the first question in the Q&A portion of the presentation.
If fentanyl is like so dirty or unpredictable, why is it the drug of choice for so many people?
Unfortunately, the population that I work with has opioid dependency, so they're physically dependent on it. Primarily, the population before bootleg fentanyl was introduced to the market, primarily people were using OxyContin. It was overprescribed, but we didn't see near the amount of deaths associated because it was prescription grade. People developed a tolerance to it. They knew how to dose themselves appropriately. This is kind of what's available in the illicit market. And really, it's, in my opinion, people just taking advantage of very vulnerable, sick people in the long run. But yeah, it's not necessarily about choice. It's about there's no other option for people in the illicit market. Obviously, from a treatment perspective, as a support worker, I'm always looking for ways and means to reduce people's risk of either their use or overdose, whether it be through methadone, Suboxone, Sublocade, things like that. But it's unfortunately, it's not a choice at this point. It's what's on the market.
And are you seeing overdoses daily?
Yes.
When asked how this information can be used to find and remove the toxic drug supply, McDonald and McIsaac both stated that this would require larger solutions, but the program can still be a level of intervention.
From my perspective, the supply is always going to be toxic if it's unregulated. I'm not sure, like, at this time, what our service and police can do to really, like, clean up the supply. Interestingly, what we have seen is that one of the primary things that people, service users, do with their results is go back to the person they bought their drugs from and put kind of what we call grassroots pressure on the supply. So going back to someone and saying, I bought this, but I'm actually getting this. I don't want this thing. I'm either not going to use it. I'm going to go find it from someone else, or at least just like providing that feedback. So like that's there as well.
And just sharing the knowledge with each other too. Like I said, you know, ensuring that our constables that are out on road dealing with people every day, they have an understanding of what's going on in community and behaviors associated to drug use, and are well equipped to try and support and deal with some of that.
Finally, when asked what message they most wanted Kingston Police to take away, McDonald and McIsaac offered the following.
Watching how complex people's mental health and substance use needs have become, I've also watched in the years that I've been doing this work, the expectations of police on road grow to an unrealistic expectation. I've watched police become police to crisis workers, to triage workers, to finding people shelter, to dealing with complex mental health and substance use needs, to responding to overdoses. This is really, I feel like, has really impacted policing. And so first off, I'd like to thank you guys for everything that you do. But I think the takeaway is that for me in working with this complex population is that, and please forgive me, but the intent is to get high, not to die. People are seeking momentary relief from like excruciating physical, mental, and emotional pain. And it's really the bigger picture as to what happened to these people along the way. It's not necessarily what's wrong with you. It's what happened to you and how much we need to invest in caring for a very vulnerable, complex population, and looking for ways and means to help them not only deal with the traumas that they carry, but feel supported and accepted and develop new coping techniques for themselves. Unfortunately, drugs have a functional purpose for some people, and generally they start using drugs because they served a purpose for them. But as I've watched people go through this very complex, hard lifestyle, I've seen it create more chaos, more trauma, more hurt for these individuals. And it really doesn't get them any further. So I think the takeaway should be is, A, we need to be a lot kinder to our police that are doing the best they can in a community or communities with little resources to help this crisis, but that people are not enjoying this. They're not out living a free-for-all. This is not them not wanting to be better or not wanting to work or not wanting to have housing. It's their needs are just so complex, and they're just really sick, hurting people. And we need to remember that day in and day out, that these are still members of our community that need love and acceptance.
I guess key takeaways from me would be, first, that we need to accept in rare cases, fentanyl is not what is contaminating other things. In fact, it is fentanyl that is contaminated, and that is really what is driving this crisis. And, you know, we really do need timely and accessible information about what is circulating in the drug supply and public information, you know, regardless of whether you're focused on community safety, harm reduction, treatment, prevention. Understanding what it is that's in the drug supply is crucial. So I think just like, you know, the more information that we can try to generate and make publicly available and then just really work together to respond. There is no, you know, there is no single response to this crisis clearly, and it is persisting. So I think, yeah, just as much collaboration as possible, kind of, you know, and just recognizing that everybody's doing their best, but also recognizing the incredibly important role that like each different stakeholder plays.
This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.